Paul is a many things. He spent his life, a career in the healthcare industry. And when did you start to write? I'm not sure I've even ever asked you that question.
You know, Rick, you've interviewed me and my friend Tom.
Oh, yeah. Friend and collaborator.
Collaborator. I met him 55 years ago in college, and he was an English major and a writing major. And so I was bored with the classes I was taking. He says, why don't you take this class with me? And I took a class on writing. And that wasn't my major, but I loved it.
Yeah.
And I started to write 55 years ago for the class, and I just kept writing intermittently. Then I got older. I got a job. I had kids.
Had to make a living.
But then as I approached retirement, maybe 13, 14 years ago, I decided to really take it more seriously. So the first book, which you were generous enough to have me on, called Pasta Man, came out.
I remember it well.
Call Me Z, and then a book of short stories, and another book soon to come out, maybe the end of fall, another Chicago story.
Is it yours or is it collaborated?
All books are collaborated with Tom and I.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And you've gotten, what do you get from it? What do you get from
pleasure.
It, Paul?
Pleasure and a lot of expenses.
Well, writing, I've always thought, been doing my whole life, writing is not easy. Anybody who thinks maybe, you know, James Patterson thinks writing is easy, but it's not. I mean, you have to, if you're going to write a good book, and you have written good books, you have to be really honest. You have to go to some depths where you may not have always gone.
Yeah, it's soul-searching. And it's grinding. Sometimes I walk past the room where my computer's at where I type the stories, and I think I hear the computer saying, get in here. Get to work.
Or get away from me. One of the two. Yeah. Another question I've never asked you in all the conversations we've had. What is your writing method? I mean, do you get up early in the morning, a la Hemingway? Do you wait until the spirit moves you? What is your
if I'm going to write, it's usually done and over by 10 a.m. Sometimes it starts at 4 a.m. That's when I'm best, in the morning. I feel more fresh, more awake, less easily distracted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I tend to write.
But you ever say, you sit down, is it when you get a feeling that you have something to say that's going to burst out of you, or is it, do you do it with any kind of regularity?
The first book, things were bursting out of me.
Yeah.
The next couple of books, it was more, I made a commitment, so I'm now obligated to do it. And it's become harder, to be honest with you.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Because it's more grinding. It's more difficult. I think maybe I'm a bigger critic on myself. Mm-hmm. So I write a sentence, and I rewrite it, and I rewrite it, and I rewrite it. And sometimes then when I edit it with Tom, we think for 5 minutes on the right word, 10 minutes,
wow.
20 minutes. Yeah, I mean.
Really? It's that intense?
Yeah. Where the first book, I was just babbling.
Yeah.
And then Tom helped me put it together. But that book took close to 6 years, where these others have taken a year, 2 years.
Yeah. You also are a storyteller, and this city has a wildly active storytelling scene. How did you come to that scene? How did you first get involved? Because as I've said before, and I know, you know, you basically somewhere in this city on any given night, there's an organized storytelling event. They vary.
Well, it's a story. I'll tell it as briefly as I can.
Why do you have to be brief?
I was dating a woman, brilliant woman. She was a physician, and she had heard about this thing called the moth.
Mm-hmm.
I was working my butt off. I didn't hear about anything.
Sure.
I was working. And she said, you should go there. You are a good speaker.
Huh.
And so I looked into what it was, and I saw that one night, I think it was at Martyrs.
Sure.
There was a moth contest. I went there. I threw my name in the hat. And
do you know what it was?
No, I really didn't. I knew there was a theme.
You knew that it was a storytelling.
Storytelling thing. There was a theme. I threw my name in the hat. There was a theme for the night. It was called Road Trips. And it was a story about me and Tom driving back from Mexico nonstop, where I killed 13 sheep in the middle of Utah.
Mm, that's no good.
In a car. And that was the story, and I won.
Did you write it or did you wing it?
I winged it.
Really?
I don't tell stories from writing. I'll write down a date of something happening or something like that, but I just kind of remember it.
What did you think of the moth event itself as being part of it?
I think this
was all new to you. You had no idea there were storytelling events.
Well, I went there and the place was sold out. It was crawling with people. There was no place to sit. It was standing room only, shoulder to shoulder. I thought, what an event. I'd never experienced anything like this. I threw my name in. I got up on stage. I was blessed. I was thrilled. I won. Mm. And I went to another one. I won another one. I mean, I won a number of these.
Get rid of that girlfriend or what?
She dropped me.
You're not as good a storyteller as I thought you were. I've ruined you.
And I won a couple of Grand Slam things, and it took over your life.
Wow.
And then at the same time, Chicago was exploding with shows.
Yep.
And then I realized that not all shows were competition, meaning you have to beat the other person.
Yeah, right.
And now most of the shows in Chicago are producers, and you just get on stage.
They're showcases.
But there's no competitions. The Moth is still a competition.
Yes.
I go there less frequently than I did in the past.
As is Poetry Slam, but it's a modest competition. I think it's fascinating because it goes to, I think, the human need to communicate. I really do believe that. We got to take a little commercial break, and we will be back in 2 or 3 minutes. Welcome back. I am here with Paul Teato, and we are talking about the storytelling scene in Chicago, which has been enriched in the month of April by a new entrant into the storytelling scene. It takes place at Carnival. The second one takes place on May 21st, but I want Paul to tell me and you how this came to be.
Okay.
You're out on a date or something, or I don't know.
You've heard me mention, you and the audience here, my friend Tom.
Yes.
My friend Tom was out on a date with his girlfriend. His girlfriend is good friends with
Terry Savage.
Terry Savage and Billy Maravitz.
Was I on this date too?
I don't know. Terry Savage and Billy Maravitz. And I know Terry. She has heard me when I've been on stage, and she's read some of my and Tom's books. And she's a big fan, and she's very supportive.
And she's a terrific person.
She's a terrific person. I love how outspoken she is.
Yes, she is.
And I guess there was a discussion around the dinner table about how to put on more performances at Carnival, because it's not just a restaurant. It's sort of like a nightclub, too.
And they got a nice room in the back there.
Beautiful. Terry barks, you should do storytelling. And from what I heard, I wasn't there, Billy says, what's storytelling? Once upon a time or something? Yeah. And she says, no. Ask Tom about it. Uh-huh. Tom says, well, my buddy does a lot of this on stage, does a little bit of co-producing. So the next thing I know,
you're a producer. You're a full-time producer.
I'm in Billy's upper room with his board or whoever he works with, trying to explain what storytelling is to these folks. And I'm looking at these guys, and they got blank faces. Yeah. They couldn't comprehend it. And I said, excuse me, looks like a number of you have a lot of vowels in your last name, like Italian. And they say, yeah. I said, okay, what do you do on Sundays or on big holidays? What do you do? And he said, well, we have family over. I said, big holidays, a lot of family.
That's a good thing.
And I said, isn't there always someone who comes, Uncle Louie, Cousin Frank? And all of a sudden they start talking. Everybody shuts up. And they listen, and either their heart breaks and they cry, or they laugh their asses off. And they said,
"Yeah, that's my family."
I said, "Well, bigger venue, not all relatives." And I said, "These shows are on fire; they're all over Chicago." So I took Billy and a couple of his people to a show in Arlington Heights.
Which one was it?
It's called First Person Live.
Yeah, sure.
And they liked it, and we planned the show. And the first show was oversold. There was 86 people in this room for, and then your fire department said no, but 82. And it was a resounding success, and Billy decided to have another show May 21st, so we have another lineup coming up.
Who was part of you read on the premiere evening of the Listen Up is a good name, too. A good name for this event. Listen Up. You read that night.
I was a teller.
You told a story.
Yeah. A guy that I knew named Dave told a really nice story about being a Little League coach, A woman named Lily talked about a situation with her father. Christy Hefner, Billy's ex-wife, told a really funny story about going to Japan on a big business trip when she's a vegetarian and they gave her a live lobster to eat.
To kill and eat. Yeah.
And then a woman who's renowned, Northwestern OBGYN.
Lauren Stryker.
She told a hysterical story about dating after being divorced. And then a nightclub owner, who I'm sure you know.
Jimmy Rittenberg.
Told an interesting story.
Who has a lot of interesting stories.
About royalty seeking some romance. And the crowd seemed to love it. The place was standing ovation.
I know almost all those people. I know you, and I know Lauren, I know Christy, and I know, who's the other one? Jimmy. That's a good lineup.
Yeah.
Did you have to tell, when you now, Mr. Impresario and Mr. Producer, what did you tell them? What did you say? You can tell anybody anything at a storytelling event. You say, hi, I want you to speak for 20 minutes. I want you to speak for 5. You're limited to 4. You cannot read, the guidelines.
The guidelines in general are no more than 10 minutes. We prefer you not to read it. That sort of takes away from emotion. We request people to not disparage races, sexes, that kind of thing. And
what about language in general? Any restrictions?
The language, more restrictions in terms of disparaging or cutting or nasty or racist remarks as opposed to
swear words.
And because I kind of know the room and I know what Billy's looking for, I'll say to the storytellers who I'm recruiting, I've heard you tell this story. Why don't you tell this story? I think it'd go over well in this venue.
That's interesting. But also, it's not just the venue. I want you to describe the venue, and then I want you to describe the crowd. Because it's a very unusual room. Right. It's like something that, you know, Al Pacino and James Caan would be serving in.
The venue is what I call a very unique nightclub. It's a very recognizable building. If you're coming into Chicago on the Eisenhower, you see the wall of Carnival, which is a sort of like a Latin fusion
building. Just before Hubbard's Cave, yeah.
Right. And it's a cool building when you walk in. There's a main entrance. It's very South American. The people are incredibly friendly, and there are multiple rooms. We were in a room that technically held 80 people. For a nightclub type of thing. Yeah. And then there's a much larger room where there are bigger shows that go on. In fact, there's a Rat Pack show going on Wednesday night.
Right.
And it's a cool show. From a producer's point of view, the staff know what they're doing. If you're on stage, you don't hear much going on from the waiters. People are quiet. They're not clinking glasses. Mm-hmm. The sound system is good. The doors are very soundproof. So it's fun to be on stage. And if the room's 70, 80, 90% filled, it gives juice to the storyteller as opposed to 10% filled.
What was Paul, if I can ask you, what was the crowd like? I mean, what age?
I was sitting with a guy who was 84 and he's still working.
Wow.
He's an attorney from Highland Park. He was happy to be there. I was also sitting with Billy for a while. I was sitting with another woman who's was probably 70. Mm-hmm. I know Tom's girlfriend was there and a few other people in the entertainment business.
Was Terry Savage there?
Terry wasn't there that night. Mm-hmm. Linda Yu was there.
Oh, wow.
And so there were a mixture of people. It's not a young crowd. It's not in their 20s, 30s.
That's interesting, I want you to make a guess for me. Out of these 80 people, let's say it was 80 people, of these 80 people, how many of them do you think had ever been to a storytelling event before?
I'd say 40 to 50%.
Yeah.
And part of that is because I have a mailing list, and my mailing list is a lot of people.
Oh, okay. So you
and then there was Billy's mailing list. So I would say 30 maybe had been before, 25, 30.
Did you tell a story?
I did, yes.
You did. You told one of your most famous stories, right?
It's one that people ask me to tell frequently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good one. It is a very good one. The price is $25, and you can buy drinks. What do you think the people who you think had never seen a storytelling event before, what was their reaction?
Well, it's not what I think. It's what they came up and told me. A number of people, I was sitting in an area where there's probably 15 or 20 people who had never been. And mm-hmm. they came up to me after the show and said, I've never been to anything like this. I thought it was going to be, you know, bedtime stories. This was this was fantastic.
Yeah.
And they said, we're going to be coming back. And I know that's a very nice thing to say, and when you're juiced up, you say it. I hope they do come back because I think it's a great form of entertainment, enjoyment, and most importantly, connection.
Yeah, it's a great form of human communication.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, people would tell stories around the fire and me kill dinosaur, whatever they did.
Right.
People didn't live with dinosaurs. You were pleased as a producer.
I was geeked up, man. I was juiced up. It was a fun night. The vibe was great. And then Billy announced at the end. I didn't know it.
Yeah.
We're going to do another show May 21st. I said, okay, I guess I'm...
Paul's the world's greatest producer.
Not my credits. Billy's
credits. The Mike Todd, the new Mike Todd of Chicago.
And I think the lineup coming up is going to be pretty good,
we're
going
to talk. We'll take a break a minute or so. The information that you need, ladies and gentlemen, is Carnival Chicago. That's Carnival with an E at the end of it, Chicago.com. We'll give you all the information you need. And when after the news, we'll come back. And it takes place, I think, doors open at 6:30. So you can sit there and have drinks and see the show at 7:30. And each person is limited, you said, to 10 minutes?
Yeah, each story is about 10 minutes.
We'll go to the news, can we? We'll go to the news, we'll come back, and we'll discuss in detail the show that takes place on the 21st. Paul, are you reading that day?
Yes, I am.
Keep saying reading. Are you telling that day?
I am, yes.
Okay, good. Then it's worth all the money that you might have to pay. We'll be right back. On May 21st at 6:30, you should go to Carnival. They will take you into the back restaurant, speakeasy, whatever they're calling it now. It's a nice performance space. And then at 7:30 will be the second Listen Up live storytelling event produced by Paul Teatro. Paul, who have you signed up to be stars of the second Carnival to do.
I'm co-producing with Billy Merovitz. Billy has gotten Hedy Ratner, a former professional cabinet maker, but now currently a huge women's activist in the Chicago area, providing business counseling.
She's been around forever. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And then Jill Wine Banks, who we were discussing during the break, who is the only female prosecutor during
Watergate.
Also appears a lot on MSNBC. He's got a couple of podcasts. The first woman who was the executive director of the American Bar Association.
Yeah, so something.
She's got stories. And then Jack Kelman, a former talent agent who now has a couple of philanthropic organizations, worked with the Better Boys Club, that kind of thing. And then I've got the godfather of Chicago storytelling, Nestor Gomez.
Nestor's an incredible guy. I met Nestor when he could barely speak English.
He is a Guatemalan immigrant, came here in the 80s with his family, he had a severe stuttering problem, learned to speak English, became an American citizen, has won close to 100 story championships, written books. He's going to tell a story about ride-sharing job when he first...
Oh, his little ride-sharing book is really something. It's really good.
And then Claudia Maru is an interesting woman. She took a bat and entered the... I didn't even know. Maybe you know about this. The Miss Tall Chicago pageant. You'll have to come and see if she won or not and how it took
place. Wait, did she say she won?
I'm not going to tell you. She competed on a bet for the Miss Tall Chicago pageant, and her story about that is quite humorous.
That's one of the many events in Chicago I seem to have missed in my thing.
I had not heard about it until I heard it tell the story, and then I'm going to be up there for a couple minutes talking not about the most recent World Series of the White Sox, our Pope's team, mm-hmm. but the 1959 version, White Sox, because I'm that old.
Yeah, me too.
I was around at that
time.
Me
too. So, and what happened after that? You're talking about the fire sirens?
Sirens and all sorts of stuff.
Wonderful. Paul, you're a good guy. You are now a producer. He's mostly a writer. I mean, I want to make that clear. He is a talented, talented writer. His next book will be out around the holiday season. And he's now a producer. Lord knows where this goes from here. The Listen Up is what it's called. And CarnivalChicago.com is the place to go. People do go and have dinner in the restaurant before the storytelling event, right?
Right. I walked in about 6 o'clock the night of the first show, and I saw a number of friends having dinner in the restaurant.
So all of your friends are getting – have you sent out the emails to all of
sent
your friends?
About 50, 60 emails to my friends.
And then Billy, who has 1,750 friends, he sends out his emails to all of his people.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try to get there. I hope it's a success because storytelling is a good thing, man. I mean, it's a good thing. Unless people are in it to become big movie stars, and they'd be idiots if they were I'm happy you become a producer.
Co-producer, at best.
Well, but, you know, Billy's flighty in his wonderful way, so maybe he'll let you have it all by yourself. Take care. You brought in your nice nephew, and he's a neighbor of this place. You want to say something?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Rick.
That's it? Okay.
Thank you, Rick.
That's it.